Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 63, being recorded on the 5th of February, 2015, with special guest David Crook. I'm Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft, and on Skype with me, I have Evan Basilik, who's with the Azure support team, and we have our special guest, David Crook. David, can you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hello, world. I've always wanted to say that on podcast. So I'm David Crook. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft. What that means is I spend about most of my time working with students and startups being successful with our technology. I kind of found my place in analytics and Azure, just kind of looking at what's cross-cutting against almost all of technology, and it's really providing value through intelligence and data and having some sort of platform to do it on. So kind of spend most of my time doing that with them.
Excellent. I'm so happy that you had the time to talk to us. Our listeners can surely benefit from some of your insights. I know you mentioned you talk to students and startups. How do they find you, first of all?
How do they find me? Usually I'll go and do presentations, and I'm fairly involved in the community. Meetup.com, if you want to go find a tech meetup, I'll kind of stop by most of them, either Microsoft or non-Microsoft. You know, since I do analytics and Azure, I'll be at Android meetups, iOS meetups, because all of them need back-end services as well. You know, they can find me on Twitter. I got David Crook 1988. You know, I respond on that. Or they can send me emails. You know, I just kind of poke around in the community. So usually it's either at events where it's a recruiting event. Hackathons are really big. If students haven't heard of Major League Hacking, I think it's MLH.io. I'm at almost every single one of those events on the East Coast.
Wow.
So what is that? I've never heard of that.
Never heard of it. It's like the coolest thing since sliced bread. it might even outdo sliced bread.
Tell us.
48-hour coding contest. So students come in with no project. They might have a team formed and maybe a general idea of what they're going to do, but no code written. And there's huge sponsors. There's Microsoft, there's Google, there's Dell. Amazon helps sponsor this with a lot of awesome prizes. And you start off and the sponsors give a talk on a couple of things that we bring to the table that they can use. And the next 48 hours, students build whatever they can in a 48-hour window, and the best project win. And it's awesome. We've had projects that I'll just do the ones that I've mentored with because I'm more familiar with them. We had one where a team was predicting whether or not you would get into a accident if you were riding your bicycle to work based off of the weather, traffic patterns, your age and general demographic. Wow. The cool thing was they were predicting with 40% accuracy or something like that. I don't think those numbers were right, but that's kind of what they threw up on the board. But the fact that they were able to do machine learning and start aggregating data together and actually make those predictions in a 48-hour time frame was really cool. I think the best hack, though, I'm going to go on a tangent for a minute. It was a box, and it had this scary-looking like key switch and a big red button. And if you turn the key switch and push the button, it ordered a Jimmy John's sandwich to your GPS location.
Well, that's excellent.
Courtesy of the guy who made it.
That is so cool.
I need that at my office in the evening sometimes when I'm there late.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. The best part was they it was all randomized. So they just did they added up how many options there were and just did a random and a modulus to grab, you know, one of those options within the range. So you got these really weird sandwich orders.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, when you do these hackathons, or when you do the startup things, do these people know anything about Azure to start with, or do you have to first get them like trained a little bit?
Some of them do, and some of them don't. It really depends on the audience. The students typically have no idea what Azure is. You know, we do kind of struggle in that space at. Because when you go to a university, a lot of the times they have their own cloud infrastructure, or students are just starting on AWS, and a lot of the times when I start working with them, they're standing up VMs and trying to host websites on VMs and manage the stack and not really focusing on the problem. So there's a lot of time spent, particularly in the student space, on training. When you start getting into the startup space, I've started classifying startups into a couple of different categories. One of them is the I just graduated college, I don't know what I'm doing startup. And then the other one is I've been a professional for 20, 30 years and, you know, it's time for me to make my own money startup.
But they still don't know what they're doing, right?
But they have a much better idea though. So they can look things up, they can actually code. And it's more of a matter of pointing them in the right direction. So, like, you know, the UK team actually did a really cool job with a company called Iliad Gaming. They made a game called Ascent. And what they really did was point them in the direction of event hubs, and they blasted the world record by over 100-fold for most players on an MMO.
Yeah, so, I think I participated in that. They had sent out requests, right, all over the place.
Yeah, they sent out requests, and everybody got
that. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so that one, it was 250,000 people that game can support, and the previous world record was 2,500.
That's not even close.
No, it's insane how big of a difference that is. So yeah, the two different groups, you know, it really depends on what they're doing. Most of the time we spend on, you know, how do you deliver value to your customers and focus on a value proposition perspective first, and then draw that back to mapping it to technology. And those are the fun conversations. I really like working with the startup space because it's more time spent on solving the problem and less time spent on, well, you use Entity Framework to stick data in a database. You probably want to, you know, use SQL, or, you know, you expect to have 20 terabytes, so maybe we should look at Hadoop.
Right.
Now, the pros, they already know about that.
Yeah, and that's got to be a much different conversation now than when you started doing that because, and again, not just the Azure cloud, but, I mean, all these other services, it used to be you had to stand this stuff up from the ground up. Right.
Oh,
now
yeah.
You just sign up for it.
I can't believe, like, the Azure team is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on a podcast, but they're kicking ass.
We're okay with that.
Yep, I won't bleep that out.
you guys are making my job so much easier. You know, great example. I want a Hadoop cluster. Before, you guys came out with HD Insight or these, like, marketplace packages from Cloudera, I had to figure out all the networking, what the software stack looked like, and I had to have a pretty in-depth knowledge of Hadoop. Now I can click, three buttons, 30 seconds, have a cluster of 100 nodes. All I got to do is stick data into it. By the way, you treat it just like blob storage, and I can start executing any .NET. I'm more of an F# fan, so I write in F#. I feel like the pipelining and error validation is easier. That's a different conversation. but I'll write F sharp, and all of a sudden I can start doing real analytics in a big data scenario in less than 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then not to mention, I can combine that with so many other things, you know, like, you know, Event Hub. How much knowledge did you have before to stand up a message passing system or the infrastructure? I mean, you know, I post out an event from the East Coast, it pops up in Asia Pacific in, I don't know, it seems like milliseconds.
Oh, yeah. Previously, you had to deal with the service bus and then set up a database and all that stuff. It's crazy.
Right. It's like five lines of code now, yeah. And I don't have to set up infrastructure, worry about networking, security.
I think just to spin up some sort of an IaaS VM and maybe a LAMP stack or something like that, and they're fiddling around with that. And obviously, you know, you're going to show them the benefits of a PaaS infrastructure. What's that to how does that conversation normally go when you like, do you point them in that direction, or do you let them do stuff in IaaS? What's the general flow there?
It's an interesting conversation depending on who I'm talking to. Some people are really, really just dead set on having IaaS. And I look at that situation and I say, you poor soul, like you have so much potential, but you're just going to spend your entire time working on this stupid server. You know, the future really is in PaaS. Like anytime somebody says lean startup and IaaS in the same sentence, they better have a really, really good, legitimate reason for that. The maintenance, if you go PaaS, you get the security, you get the compliance, you get the maintenance, you get the geo-redundancy, and you let Microsoft pay for it, and 9 times out of 10, it costs less. And think about if you have one engineer just spending on IaaS stuff, that's an engineer's not cheap. You're looking at least $100,000. That's not including benefits. So.
Yeah, but remember, David, but you don't get to push all the buttons and the shiny lights and flip all the knobs, right? Which is, you know, which I can't believe people still want to do in this day and age. Right?
I know. I like flipping the knobs and stuff too, but like, you know, especially if you're an entrepreneur, let's look at LobbyYard was one of the examples that I use all the time, because we're talking about a dev shop of 13 guys. So there's 13, I don't even think it's just, I think it's just 13 total in the company. That includes the CEO, the CTO, the developers, the sales guys. I think total they've got 5 developers. And they are making sure that kids don't have sexual predators coming on to elementary school campuses. They're stopping abductions before they happen. They're doing facial recognition and cross-referencing that with federal databases in real time, and they're doing all of it platform as a service, and they don't have to spend anybody on infrastructure stuff. The biggest woes they have right now are that a lot of the schools are still on XP with IE6, so they spend a lot of interop time with IE6 versus 7, 8, 9, and 10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
And God, now we've got Spartan. So
yep.
From the back end perspective, they're set. They're doing these really amazing things, and it's only 5 guys. If you take that kind of technology and compare it even against the big boys who are doing that kind of stuff, like background checks and stuff, you've got huge teams of developers, and it's just really cool to see a 5-man development team being able to pull off that kind of technology, and it's because they're using platform as a service. They can focus on the problem, not, you know, flipping the shiny knobs.
Well, that's the thing that I always, you know, I do a lot of speaking at user groups and you know, some of our internal conferences and everything. You know, and the thing that I always talk about to people is, none of us got into the business. I mean, with the exception of a company like, say, a Microsoft, right, or, you know, Oracle or those places, nobody got into business because they wanted to run servers or they wanted to write an OS. They started leveraging computers and all that stuff because they had some other business that required it, right? And you just get sucked into all the stuff that adds no value to your core business when you start dealing with the OS, you know, because all you really care about is IIS, and you don't even really care about IIS. You just want the web pages to come up.
Right? Yeah. So I teach class over at Wake Tech. I teach two project classes over there this semester. I'm teaching the programming final project and the database final project. And they have to deliver a piece of software. And, you know, kind of to that note, the first thing I ask students who want to be technologists or entrepreneurial technologists, either software or hardware, I ask them, what is technology? You know, a carpenter, he knows what carpentry is, and a plumber knows what plumbing is. But a lot of times people forget what technology is and why we have it. What is the value of technology? And I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I'm actually working on a blog article to talk about this a little bit more in depth. And at the root, technology really is offloading complex process and thought from human hands and minds. It's kind of like a broad, abstract view on it, but it really means that it's all about delivering value and making things easier and simpler for us. And if you are spending all of your time focusing on this IaaS thing, are you actually spending time delivering that value to your customer? Or should you be instead, if you like fiddling with servers, you know, go work at Microsoft or, you know, Amazon and work on their cloud services instead?
Yep. But just on the other side of it, though, surely there's got to be some situations where the IaaS does make sense. And how do you guide these folks, you know, as to what the right approach is going to be or should be?
Yeah, so there, I guess there are some scenarios where IaaS might be necessary, but it's so niche. I very rarely come across somebody who legitimately needs IaaS, especially in the startup or student space. You know, maybe like a fringe security company who's focusing on, you know, cybersecurity. I could see that, but you know, I don't spend that much time focusing on those kinds of problems. When I'm thinking of, you know, I mean, even things like the last hackathon that I was at, so I compete at hackathons as well. We have our own internal Microsoft hackathons where Microsoft folks will get together. We built one for a oil and gas pipeline attaching Arduinos to see if we could pick up pressure sensitivity differences to see if there might be a leak in the pipeline. And we were thinking about, you know, later down the road, how would we solve people trying to hack into it, and how would we solve people physically trying to attack the devices in the pipeline. And even in scenarios like that, we still couldn't find a good use case for IaaS. There seemed to always be a PaaS-based solution that fit. And, you know, we're starting to get into that world where I just don't think IaaS makes any sense anymore.
But you're looking at, David, right? Your focus is mostly greenfield type development, right? It's not lift and shift type scenarios.
Yeah, I guess I look at IaaS as an onboarding ramp for people who are enterprise and they need to get their loads onto the cloud. So if you have legacy applications and bring those on, you know, you want to be able to scale those easier, then yeah, that's a good solution for IaaS. You're right. I have been primarily focused on greenfield. Thank goodness.
Now in the startup space, where is the Docker technology picking up steam a lot? We hear a lot about it.
Docker. I've been working with a couple of startups. I have my own actually. And we evaluated Docker versus Chef versus Azure Automation Services. And the conclusion that we came to personally, and, you know, Docker seems to pick up. It's got a lot of hype, and so does Chef. But we just didn't see that much value in it because at the end of the day, you have to make those platform-specific implementations anyways. Mm-hmm. It tries to abstract that platform away from you. So in an enterprise scenario, it makes sense because you can very you can afford to have specialized teams. So you have a team who focuses on creating containers, another group who focuses on creating implementations of those containers for each platform, and then the guy who writes the deployment scripts, and he can use a container, and it doesn't matter what the underlying infrastructure is. But when you don't have a team where you can make those sorts of affordances, we found that Azure Automation Services just kicked so much more butt. You could take those same PowerShell scripts and tie them directly into build. So we have continuous integration straight out to dev test environments that we can scale up and down. And we'll have three different environments. We'll have production, we'll have a certification, and a test. We'll deploy out to dev and test, and that's just where devs and testers, like, you know, do their thing. And then we've got production, and then cert is kind of where we take a freeze and we put it, put our system out there, and test an actual upgrade. So we'll take whatever production is and we'll duplicate it. And the only way that we found to do that well is using Azure Automation Services and the PowerShell commandlets.
Okay. So, that's actually very useful, a comparison over there, I must say.
Yeah, they all kind of look like competing tools, in my eyes. It's either you're trying to deploy, you're either trying to automate your infrastructure or do dev test. And since you can use Azure Automation for all of them, there seemed to be no point in having, you know, n number of skills and another stack on our platform that, you know, did the same need as PowerShell. You got to know PowerShell anyways.
Right. So what's the most popular platform that startups pick these days? Is it the ASP.NET, or is it the PHP stack? Or
oh, man, so I'm in a pretty competitive open-sourcey area. So over here, there's a lot of Python, PHP, and Ruby on Rails. I'm running on a lot of Red Hat Linux servers. So that's been a, you know, from an evangelism and conversion standpoint, that's been a, that was a pain point until I started noticing more of our, PaaS offerings, having support for Ruby on Rails. That was a pretty big one, because we have several, dev schools in the area that, that teach Ruby. And then Red Hat's headquarters is just in downtown Raleigh, so.
Yeah, that, that had to be kind of an interesting shift for you, right? Because when we were really starting to embrace the open source stuff, right? I mean, it's not Windows Azure anymore; it's Microsoft Azure, right? And you know, huge chunks of our the deployments are Linux these days, right? I mean, it's like come one, come all. That had to really change the conversation that you had with the startups, you know, who were off doing open source and, oh, I can't do Microsoft because they don't do open source. But now you're able to just say, hey, you know, we don't really care what you bring. Does that,
yeah.
I mean, do you find that, was that a really big flip for you, or was that kind of a gradual thing that you just kind of saw coming, or like how
yeah, there is still, there, what was the question?
I was going to say, I mean, how do you present that to customers? Because they still have this perception of Microsoft as, you know, hey, it's, if it's not Microsoft, we don't want it, right?
Yeah, so if it's the people who want the open source and they've been open source their entire lives, I have a really hard time communicating with them. And interesting background, when I went to school at NC State and I was a Red Hat junkie, you know, I put in my application at Red Hat, Google, and then Microsoft just called me and said, come work for us. And I was like, well, I guess. And then kind of converted me. That's a long, different story. But then, you know, so I kind of see where they're coming from. There's just this innate like hatred out of nowhere that they had. And the conversation has changed a lot with people, with a lot of them, where, you know, bring your Linux loads over to us, we'll take care of it, we can stick it in the same data center, now you can start leveraging our PaaS solutions. But then there's still those hardcore junkies, and you know, they're going to hold those opinions no matter what for a while. But what's starting to happen with some of them is they're noticing what some of their buddies who have started adopting this technology are able to do, and they're starting to take a little bit of a closer look. So, you know, a really great story a couple days ago, one of the incubators in Citrix right across the street from Red Hat had a meetup where one of their startups got fully funded off of using Azure. And they walked through, you know, the whole thing on how they used Azure to jumpstart their startup and get funding. And you would have never seen anything like that in a Citrix building across the street from Red Hat, like, I don't know, even a year ago.
That's amazing that, and I want to say that, that such a little change in our presentation makes a big difference, because it's not really a little change, but it's amazing to see that kind of community start to recognize that even if they don't run our stack, they can run in our environment.
Yeah, and we've actually been hiring a lot of people within Microsoft. I know my own team, we have a little open source internal email group where they just email back and forth like questions about, well, I'm trying to do this on PHP, and somebody else comes back and says, well, why are you trying to do that? Node.js has this great thing. You should just totally convert to Node.js. It's interesting, because before it was like, it's ASP.NET C# only. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, you suddenly have all these options, and everybody internally who's used to not having those options is like, let's play with everything.
Yeah, so that means I need to enlist you to my cause. I've been trying to talk up the fact that at some point we should really start supporting some of these third-party OSs and third-party components at a first-party level, right? We may not ship them, but we should. I'd love to see us start supporting Linux the same way we do Windows. Maybe not quite as good, but a lot better than we do today, where we just kind of say, "Hey, it starts up and you're good," right? I'd really
be
able to dig into that stuff.
Any of our gallery-hosted images, I feel like we should have some level of support, either through Microsoft or a third party, perhaps. The concern that I have is that we then become the evil empire all over again. You know, they're watching us sort of thing.
Yeah.
That has a tendency to happen. I think Apple is on its way into the, like, you know, cultish thing. They've been on their way there for a while. Google is back to like, you know, we don't think you're trying to kill us anymore. And now Microsoft is off of that and back into the cool thing. At least that's the way it seems. There's a nice rotating triangle.
Well, David, this has been an excellent conversation. Evan, anything else that we have for David?
No, I mean, this is great. It's really neat. I mean, you know, because I live in support, I live in the world of, hey, I had this app and I'm moving it to Azure. I don't get to talk to the Greenfield stuff as folks as much. So this is really cool to see, kind of have the visibility into that side of the world.
Hey,
Hey, David, but I'm sure our listeners would appreciate some of those links that you were talking about. If you could just put together a few that, you know, you think our listeners can benefit, well, put it in the show notes, okay?
Yeah, definitely. We can send them, I'll have some stuff. I'll just do a write up on my website and then get it there, and then I'll also give you all the links. And,
yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be
if
cool.
If you guys ever want to have me back, you know, let me know. I can put together a list of stuff, or we can bring some startups who are doing some cool stuff. You know, they're really, really interesting what some of these companies are doing.
That would be actually a nice thing. I mean, we do ask our listeners to send us questions or talk to us about what they're doing. And yeah, I mean, it sounds like a nice make it real scenario where we can see how someone's actually using Azure in the real world.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool.
Great, David. Well, thank you again. And Evan, thanks as always.
Yep, sounds good. See you next week. Thanks, David.
All right, thank you. See
you guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.